to Barely Audible Whisper, a weekly NPR parody podcast in no way associated with NPR, brought to you in no part by the following parody sponsors.
The Paul Manafort Prison Clothing Company, offering prisoners the very finest in $15,000 ostrich skin orange jumpsuits.
The Congressional Conservative Vertebrae Conservatory for conserving congressional conservatives' vertebrae, helping congressional conservatives relocate the spines that have been missing since November 8th, 2016.
And the Paul Manafort Prison Chastity Belt, now available with a lifetime guarantee because that's how long he's going to need it.
I am Dave.
And I am Molly, and if our voices were any smoother, they would have been made into a $15,000 coat and used as evidence against Paul Manafort.
In an interview with Reuters, President Trump echoed the fears of his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, that an interview with special counsel Robert Mueller could be a potential perjury trap, saying, quote,
"So, if I say something and he says something, and it's my word against his, and he's best friends with Mueller, so Mueller might say, well, I believe Comey. And even if I'm telling the truth, that makes me a liar. That's no good."
As always, our Trump impersonator is a woman because we hear he hates that.
The president went on to make false assertions about the legal authority of a president to investigate himself, saying, quote,
"I can go in and I could do whatever. I could run it if I want. But I decided to stay out. I'm totally allowed to be involved if I wanted to be. So far, I haven't chosen to be involved. I'll stay out."
Barely Audible Whisper obtained exclusive audio of President Trump taking over the Mueller investigation and interrogating himself.
"President Trump. Yes, Special Counselor Trump. Is it true?"
Objection. Truth is not truth.
"Rudy Giuliani is correct. Truth is not truth. Trump was trying to trap Trump in a perjury trap, but Trump was too smart to be outsmarted by Trump. Fake news. No perjury trap. I was establishing the fact."
Objection! A fact is not a fact.
"Damn it. I am too good to trap myself. I cannot establish facts when I have established that there are no facts. Face it, Counselor Trump. I am Trump, and no one can outsmart Trump, not even Trump." "That's true."
Objection! Truth is not truth, the truth of which was truthfully established in the truly landmark case, Truth v. Truth, whose long-standing precedent that truth, it was not truth, was established 45 seconds ago when I said, "Truth is not truth."
"True."
Objection!
"Stop interrupting me, Rudy Giuliani. Even though you are defending Trump, Trump doesn't like it when you interrupt Trump."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Trump, but as a loyal Trump sycophant, I must defend Trump against all enemies of Trump, even if Trump's enemies are Trump."
"Sean Hannity warned me about this problem last night when he was tucking me into bed. Hannity called it the Trump paradox. Is Trump so Trump that Trump can create a Trump that is Trump enough to out-Trump Trump? There's only one way to solve this. Blame Obama. Tempting, but no. In order to discover the true nature of the true Trump, we have to admit the truth."
I'm melting! Melting!
"The idea of truth made Rudy Giuliani melt like a witch, which proves this is a witch hunt. Fake news. Melton Rudy melted, which is why I call him Melton Rudy. Only a true Trump can turn a loyal ally into an enemy with a single nickname. The Trump is strong with you. Nobody misses opposing points of view by inventing childish nicknames better than Trump. But the question remains, is Trump Trump enough? Do you accept Trump's challenge of answering Trump's questions about Trump?" "But if I say something, and Trump says something, and it's my word against Trump, and Trump is best friends with Trump, so Trump might say, well, I believe Trump. And even if I'm telling the truth, that makes me a liar. That's no good." "That makes perfect sense. That is why you are the most presidentiest president in the history of presidents. But as the most special counselor in the history of special counselors, I have to question your most presidential, most tremendous presidentness. Do you want answers? I think I'm entitled. Do you want answers? I want the truth. You can handle the truth. We live in a world that has a wall that isn't being built, and the funding of the wall I'm lying about has to be lied about by Trump. I tell more lies than you could possibly fathom. I tweet words like witch hunt, rigged witch hunt, and totally rigged witch hunt. I tweet those words as the backbone of life spent conning people. You tweet them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor inclination to explain myself to a Trump who has sex with porn stars under the blanket of the very con job I provide, and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and arranged for Michael Cohen to pay off the porn stars. Otherwise, I suggest you fake a bone spur and avoid standing a post. Either way, Trump doesn't give a damn what Trump thinks Trump is entitled to. Mr. Trump, did you collude with Putin? No collusion. Did you collude with Putin? No collusion. Did you collude with Putin? You're goddamn right I did. If it pleases the Trump, Trump moves that Trump be dismissed, and Trump immediately begin a cover-up of everything Trump just confessed to Trump, so that Trump may continue to avoid the consequences of being Trump.
The jury in the Paul Manafort trial reached verdicts on Tuesday. Although the jury found Mr. Manafort guilty on 8 of the 18 counts against him, they remained deadlocked on the other 10 counts.
There has not been a conclusion this anticlimactic since Stormy Daniels' sexual encounter with Donald Trump.
Despite the fact that a verdict of guilty on 8 counts and a mistrial on the other 10 counts is completely self-explanatory, the news media felt the need to explain the self-explanatory explanation.
Here to explain 8 guilty counts and 10 hung jury counts is the Count from Sesame Street.
8 guilty counts. 1, 2, 3, 4,
is he gonna do all counts?
5, 6, 7, 8 guilty count.
Everyone understands what the number 8 means, but what does it mean that the jury was hung on the other 10 counts?
10 hung jury counts. 1, 2.
Please stop counting the counts.
But in more than 40 years of counting things, this is the first time I have ever counted counts. My entire life has been building to this moment when the count counts.
I appreciate that, but the number of counts is not significant.
If the count of the counts don't count, then what does count?
The fact that the jury was hung on more than half of the charges against Manafort might indicate that Mueller's case is not as strong as we initially believed.
One speculation.
But isn't multiple convictions and no acquittals a major win for Mueller?
Two speculations.
This could be directly related to last week's closed-door conference in the judges' chamber, in which it is rumored that the attorneys discussed potential problems with jurors.
Three speculations?
The count is right. We should avoid speculation and focus on what we know.
But in terms of new information, all we know is...
8 counts guilty, 10 counts hung jury.
Pope Francis wrote an open letter to all Catholics in response to the most recent revelation of 300 more priests molesting at least 1,000 more children, this time in Pennsylvania.
The Catholic Church does not condone the predatory sexual abuse of children by our priests. We will do everything in our power to see that the priests who have committed these heinous crimes are brought to justice. And this time, we need it.
Unfortunately, the Pope's letter did not include specific steps that the Catholic Church will take to either purge pedophiles from the priesthood or bring guilty priests to justice.
We're not actually going to do anything, but what are the odds of something like this could happen again? After more than 30 years of protecting the pedophiles, I'm sure that this will stop on its own, right?
Catholics of good conscience are struggling with the implications of rampant sexual abuse covered up by the institutional authorities of their faith. Barely Audible Whisper documented the revelations of one such Catholic who journeyed to the Vatican to offer a solution.
Thank you for meeting with me, Cardinal. I have received a divine revelation that solves the most serious problem that faces the Catholic Church.
Thank God! I've prayed for 30 years that God would send a messenger with a solution to the most grave and troubling problem confronting our church. The problem of bland and flavorless communion wafers.
No! I did not travel all the way to the Vatican to address the issue of bland communion wafers. Although, now that you mention it, they do taste like styrofoam. You'd think the body of Christ would be more flavorful.
That's too bad. I'm from Ireland. I eat enough bland food as it is.
I have been sent here to solve the problem of priests and cardinals being child rapists, Cardinal McChild Rapist.
'Tis absolutely shameful. I can't even comprehend the depraved moral bankruptcy that would lead a so-called servant of the Lord so far astray that you could lead me to believe that you had found a way to add flavor to communion wafers so bland they make men pine for rice cakes, only to treat a trivial thing like priests raping children as though it were a legitimate crisis or serious catastrophe.
With all due respect, Cardinal McChild Rapist, Catholics all across the world are struggling to comprehend how their church could be responsible for so much evil. Many of us have stopped tithing our weekly donations.
Withholding donations! This is a legitimate crisis and a serious catastrophe.
I know my solution sounds crazy. It's so radically counterintuitive that I didn't believe myself at first.
Whatever it is, I'll sanction it, if it means we stop losing money. These absurdly ornate red robes don't come cheap.
I know this will sound crazy, but just hear me out. What if the Catholic Church stopped protecting child molesters?
I'm sorry. I want to help you, but the words coming out of your mouth just sound like gibberish.
What would you do if you found out that a priest has been raping children?
Same thing I always do. Transfer him to another parish and make sure his new job includes lots of unsupervised access to lots more children.
What if, instead of doing that, you kicked him out of the priesthood and turned him over to the police?
Again, all I hear is gibberish. It's like you're speaking in tongues.
You have personally denied communion to parishioners just because they're divorced.
Divorce is a sin whose penance denies the sinner the ability to receive God through the sacraments, even if those sacraments taste like rice cakes.
But when a priest rapes children?
I transfer him to another parish and make sure his new job includes lots of unsupervised access to lots more children.
Why don't you punish raping children more severely than you punish divorce?
Because then I couldn't be transferred to another parish with a new job that includes lots of unsupervised access to lots more children.
I know what I'm suggesting sounds radical. The idea of forcing priests who molest children to face consequences goes against every action the Catholic Church has taken over more than 3 decades of cover-ups. But I remember the story of another man with radical ideas.
Do tell! The idea of someone telling a priest the tale of, quote, another man with radical ideas is so original and not at all hackneyed that I have absolutely no idea what you may be alluding to.
There once was a man who challenged the traditional order of things. He questioned the religious leaders of his day and was made to suffer for his so-called radical ideas. That man's name was Jesus Christ.
Wow! I had no idea where you were going with that. The clever and completely original way you made the mystery man turn out to be Jesus has inspired me. From now on, the Catholic Church will stop protecting pedophile priests and immediately report all claims of child abuse to the proper secular authorities.
That's great! Do you really mean it?
Of course not, but that's what we're going to tell people so they keep giving us their money.
Earlier this year, Barely Audible Whispers' hardest-hitting reporter, Harley Hardball, had an interview with gubernatorial candidate Casey Cagle, which culminated in Cagle confessing that he is unfit to govern.
Due to our widespread, vast, devoted audience, we can only assume that this powerful interview is the reason Cagle lost the Republican primary to Secretary of State Brian Kemp.
Harley Hardball now sets his sights on Kemp, who, in his position as Secretary of State, is aggressively working to make it difficult for African Americans to vote.
His opponent, Stacey Abrams, hopes to be the first African American woman to govern a state.
It doesn't take a genius to see the problem here, which leads us to the question.
Does Brian Kemp think we're stupid?
I'm Harley Hardball, here with Republican candidate for governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp. Kemp is currently the Secretary of State in Georgia. Mr. Kemp, your predecessor, now Senator Karen Handel, stepped down from her position as Secretary of State in order to focus on her election. You have not. Why?
I believe in finishing the job and doing it well.
So it has nothing to do with the fact that your position as Secretary of State puts you in charge of the election that will determine whether or not you become governor.
I haven't the slightest idea what you're talking about.
Mr. Kemp, do you think we're stupid? You say you believe in doing a job well. When President Obama's Department of Homeland Security offered to work with states to secure their voting systems, you were the only state official who declined the help. In what possible way is that a case of you doing your job well?
It seems to me that this was an attempt by the federal government to federalize elections under the guise of security.
So you're concerned with election security. Georgia's election machines are how old?
17 years. Not even old enough to vote. That was a joke.
I'm aware. It was a stupid joke, and therefore I did not laugh. On what operating system do the computers run?
Windows.
I'm going to need you to be more specific.
Windows 2000.
And is it true that Georgia's election machines do not produce a voter-verifiable paper record?
Yes.
And is there a mandated audit of the vote after elections?
There is not.
Is this common?
No, I don't know what it is in other states.
Do you think I'm stupid?
No.
I do know what is done in other states. They keep a paper record. They have mandatory audits. Only Georgia, Louisiana, and Delaware do neither. Georgia has over twice the combined population of Louisiana and Delaware. If you were a hacker looking to influence an election, which state would you target?
As I am not a hacker, I cannot be certain whether an outdated operating systems or lack of paper trail or lack of auditing would make me more likely to want to hack a given state.
Mr. Kemp, do you think we're stupid? In what possible way can you claim to be interested in the security of our elections? Let's talk about your opponent, Stacey Abrams.
Well, she is a very articulate, but...
Oh, I'm going to stop you right there and point out how condescending it is to call an African-American articulate.
Well, she has radical leftist views that will raise taxes.
Such as?
Big government.
Mr. Kemp, I've read through your previous attacks on Ms. Abrams' policies, and none of them have any degree of specificity. You're simply pulling from the GOP grab bag of attacks on any liberal.
Her ideas didn't work in the Obama administration, and it won't work for Georgia.
Such as attempting to associate the candidate with a president your base hates and stating supposed policy failures without backing them up. I'm assuming you use these tactics because you think we're stupid?
I use these tactics because they work.
Touché. Is that also why you use voter suppression to control the electorate?
I have no intention of suppressing legitimate voters. I'm trying to prevent voter fraud.
So you're not concerned about hacking. There is proof that election hacking has taken place. You are concerned about fraudulent voters. There is little, if any, proof of fraudulent voting. Are you completely irrational, or do you just think we're stupid?
Many people have said that illegal immigrants have voted illegally.
Vague, fake information from unnamed sources. I can see why you got Trump's endorsement. Let's talk about Randolph County.
I love the good people of Randolph County.
Randolph County's Elections Board plans to close all but two of its polling places.
Well, let me be clear. I think this is a bad idea.
This was part of a push by Mike Malone, an ally of yours, who you directed to go around the state and recommend polling place closures to various counties. Seeing the backlash and the outrage, you are now distancing yourself from this plan.
Is there a question?
Yes. Do you think we're stupid?
Well, the closures are not politically motivated. It's an issue of compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act.
These are all government buildings who are already supposed to comply with the ADA. Why are you only concerning yourself with them now? And why only closing them as polling places as opposed to taking them out of use altogether?
Well, it's not my purview.
And why do you just happen to be focused on areas with high African American populations?
Easy.
Yes?
Because impoverished areas are more likely to be African American heavy and also more likely to be unable to afford ADA compliant upgrades. Yep, that's it.
Mm-hmm. You are also investigating organizations whose mission is to increase voter registration. These investigations yielded no charges, indictments, or convictions.
Well, my belief is that we scared these corrupt organizations into compliance.
In your tenure as Secretary of State, you've enforced the purging of voter rolls, which impacts African American voters very disproportionately. What do you have to say for yourself?
The rules to stay on the voter rolls are very straightforward, yet blacks...
Careful!
African Americans seem to have trouble following them.
Mr. Kemp, what you've done is simultaneously transparent and indefensible. Anyone with a brain can see that you're trying to cheat to win this election. Why do you need to cheat to win a state that has been consistently red since Jimmy Carter?
Because I'm pretty sure I can get away with it.
Why? Do you think we're stupid?
Yes, I do. I'm counting on it.
Sadly, you may be right. We may be stupid enough to elect you. Check your voter registration, everyone.
Michael Cohen pled guilty in a Manhattan federal court Tuesday to
8
counts less than
10
minutes after the Paul Manafort verdict was announced.
Why are you still here, Count?
There are so many counts to count. A Tuesday was such a bad day for Trump. Even Fox News, which Trump counts as an ally, reported negative accounts.
Of particular note were...
Count 7!
And...
Count 8!
Which Cohen admitted to arrange payments of...
$130,000!
To porn star Stormy Daniels and...
$150,000!
To playmate Karen McDougal in exchange for their silence regarding affairs he had with...
Two whores!
Mr. Cohen testified under oath that he made those payments, quote, in coordination with and at the direction of a candidate for federal office.
For more on the story, Barely Audible Whisper reluctantly turns to former playmate Karen McDougal, who, as part of her payoff, was promised, but never received, a job as a writer for American media. The
third party,
Trump ally who paid to kill her story because we want to give her a chance at a career in journalism that she was promised.
Hello, I'm Karen McDougal, and I'm at a place in my life right now where I'm doing journalist stuff. Because I used to be at a place in my life where I was having an affair with a married rich dude. And I feel guilty about that. Like, really guilty. But not so guilty that I won't cash in on the opportunity the affair, which I feel really guilty about, gave me to do journalist stuff because I'm at a different place in my life now where I do journalist stuff. And as part of doing journalism stuff, which I'm at a place in my life that I do now, I interviewed Lainey Davis, who is at a place in his life where he is Michael Cohen's attorney, who is at a place in his life where he pled guilty to felony campaign finance violations.
The agreement entered into by my client, Michael Cohen, is not a cooperation agreement, but my client will gladly cooperate because, well, even though he's not legally cooperating witness, he is a witness, and he is cooperating.
That statement seemed to contain a lot of contradictions, and I know about contradictions, because I used to be at a place in my life where I carried on an affair with a married man, and I felt guilty. But not so guilty that I stopped. Anyway, because I'm at a place in my life where I do journalist stuff, I am going to talk about the journalist stuff from my journalist interview with Lainey Davis. Which is really confusing because He said his client would cooperate, but not in the legal sense of legally cooperating, because legal stuff is complicated and journalist stuff about legal stuff is hard.
Without getting into the specifics of what my client knows, I can say my client knows a lot of specifics that he's willing to specify in exchange for not yet specified specifics.
I don't know what that means.
Nobody knows what it means. Lainey Davis purposefully being vague but intriguing. It's a negotiating tactic used to gain leverage for his client.
Who are you?
I'm the legal expert you called to consult on your story. I wasn't going to do it at first because of how infuriatingly stupid you are, but then I thought, how often do you get to consult with a playmate you used to masturbate to?
So, as a journalist, which I am, because I'm at a place in my life where I do journalism stuff, I was wondering what the implications of Michael Cohen's guilty plea are for Donald Trump, who I was in love with because he was great, because he told me he was great. And in the words of Maya Angelou, when someone tells you how great they are, believe them. I feel so guilty. What's the answer to my journalism question?
Michael Cohen's plea implicates the president as ordering a conspiracy to commit fraud as part of a conspiracy to violate campaign finance law. However, the president has not been indicted, either due to lack of evidence or the unsettled constitutional questions regarding whether or not a sitting president can be indicted.
I did research, which is journalism stuff, which I do now because I'm at a place in my life where I do journalism stuff. And according to my journalism research, that makes Trump, who I used to love, guilty of being an unindicted co-conspirator.
Not exactly.
Journalism stuff about legal stuff is hard.
Trump is, in essence, an unindicted co-conspirator. But technically, it takes an impaneled grand jury to name an unindicted co-conspirator, and there is not a grand jury in this case. Also, since indictment is the first step towards proving guilt by definition, an unindicted co-conspirator cannot technically be said to be guilty.
So, to sum it up, Michael Cohen, who is a witness who is cooperating but not cooperating witness, implicated Trump as a co-conspirator who hasn't been indicted, but isn't an unindicted co-conspirator because even though he committed a crime to become president, being president prevents him from being indicted for the crime he committed to become president.
That is 100% accurate.
Yay! I did journalism. I'm Karen McDougall, reporting to you from the place in my life where I am doing journalist stuff.
In a week where disastrous Trump-related headlines were quickly replaced with even more disastrous Trump-related headlines, Americans are asking themselves, how bad could it possibly get?
The answer to questions about relative possibilities of badness is Venezuela.
The economic, political, and humanitarian crisis of the complete and total breakdown of the government of Venezuela has gotten so bad that it has led to a complete and total breakdown of the news media's ability to describe such a complete and total breakdown.
For example, in an effort to explain how worthless Venezuela's currency has become, The Guardian concocted a graph showing the price of a single chicken is equal to a pile of money stacked so high it is twice the height of the chicken.
And in order to demonstrate just how irrational President Maduro's erratic system of strict government price controls have become, Reuters calculated that the price of a bar of soap is equivalent to the price of 152,381 gallons of gasoline.
For more on the crisis in Venezuela, Barely Audible Whisper sent our crisis correspondent and bizarre analogy expert to file a report.
I am coming to you from Venezuela, where conditions are getting worse and the analogies are getting weirder. It's like if you took the worst day of your life and added the 10 other worst things that have ever happened to you and used that as the measure of the best day of your life. Or, as Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro says,
everything is great.
President Maduro is such an insanely incompetent and irrational narcissist. He makes President Trump look like an actual stable genius.
I have fixed everything. I have changed the worthless Bolivar currency to an equally worthless crypto-backed currency called Petros. But
I have slashed 5 zeros from the last digits of its value, so 500,000 bolivars is now worth 50 petros.
That's literally what he did. Nobody knows what the change in currency means because he offered no explanation or instruction about what it means. But he implemented the drastic change over a one-day improvised holiday, giving Venezuelans exactly one entire day to figure out the inexplicable foundational economic change on their own. That's crazier than a crack-addicted Tasmanian devil on acid.
I would like to stress the fact that this brilliant plan was thought up without the help of any so-called economic experts.
He actually bragged that his idiotic economic brain fart was not crafted by experts. This was apparently a desperate attempt to appeal to the kind of useless populist sentiment you'd hear if you squeezed Steve Bannon's liver on the fifth day of a tequila bender.
As I purchased a chicken with a stack of currency twice the height of said chicken, I assure you, I was not thinking this must be the result of an economic policy crafted by experts.
I met a peasant who was a multi-millionaire 4 years ago, but is now so thin with starvation, she reminds me of the scene in the movie Patch Adams where Robin Williams does the ventriloquist act with the skeleton.
I was unable to eat the chicken I bought because a coop to keep the chicken in costs more than a stack of currency high enough to build a coop out of currency. So I built a coop out of currency, but the chicken was able to push through the currency coop because it was made out of paper money.
It's like that Alanis Morissette song, Isn't It Ironic? Where it isn't actually irony, but it's similar enough to irony that if you don't really grasp the concept of irony, you'll confuse it for irony.
I tried to flee Venezuela last month. I fled to Brazil, but the influx of Venezuelan refugees into countries such as Brazil has led to anti-immigrant backlash in those countries that is so intense I was beaten mercilessly by vigilante gangs of anti-immigrant Brazilians. So like so many other Venezuelan refugees, I had to flee the country I was seeking refuge in and return to the country I was originally fleeing from.
That's like if the Alanis Morissette song Isn't It Ironic were actually ironic. And also profoundly sadder, being forced to flee back to the country you were fleeing from because the fear of being beaten to death was more imminent than the fear of starvation is infinitely more heartbreaking than some rain on your wedding day.
Everything is going great.
I'd like to report that the moral of this story is that the people of Venezuela need America's help, but pleading with this administration to do anything to ease the suffering of foreigners is like that Alanis Morissette song where the man refuses to listen. I'm not actually familiar with her music, but I assume there's at least one Alanis Morissette song about a man who doesn't listen.
Everything is going great.
So I guess the moral of the story for Americans is that it really is important that we keep President Trump's corrupt, erratic, narcissistic, authoritarian impulses in check, because the people of Venezuela once asked themselves, how bad could it possibly get? It's like rain on your wedding day!
Thank you for listening to Barely Audible Whisper, a NPR parody podcast made possible by the following really awesome people. Producer, writer, and co-host Dave Baldwin. Writer and actor Daniel Carter Brown. Co-host Molly Brown. Actors Corey Burns and Robin Ward. Please like us and follow us and do all the things you can do to support us and share us with all your friends. We appreciate your support. Thanks again.
Hubris!